Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Impuga. This evening we talk about predictable elections in Africa. And with us tonight is Robert Mugabe, a journalist with the Voice Media Group. He joins us by phone from the Rwandan capital, Kigali. Good evening, Robert.
Good evening, sir.
Welcome to the show. And we're also joined by regular panelist Suleiman Mugula. He's an independent political analyst. He joins us from Durban, South Africa. Welcome to the show once again, Suleiman.
Thank you very much for inviting me and good evening to our listeners.
You're very much welcome. As I said, we're talking about elections in Africa later this year. In a few months, we shall have elections in about three African countries. Among those, maybe is Rwanda. But a recent report by Pan-African Research Network Afrobarometer showed that Africans distrusted their national electoral commissions, and even they doubted the quality of those elections in most African countries. Now, since one of those countries that's hosting elections in August is Rwanda, let's start in Kigali with Robert. How is the mood over there just less than 2 months for the elections?
Thank you for having me. The mood is... there is nothing, there is no indication that actually there is a huge, like there is no hysteria like election is coming. Everything is running normal and it is calm everywhere. As usual, just life is going on as usual, except some politicians who make statements and call for press conferences, but there is no fever like showing that there is something going on in 2 months.
I see. Suleiman, that must be quite a contrast with the Rwanda's not far away neighbor, Kenya, where campaigns are getting hot.
Precisely, Douglas. It shows you how far in Africa we have gone. Since the 1990s, when we had the new wave of democratization of the continent, some countries have decided to offer genuine democracy. Others have decided to continue blasting the population, pretending that we have got elections when actually there are no elections. When you are staying in Rwanda, like any other countries, I think we can classify them, some of them, benevolent dictatorship, others outright dictatorship, and then the democracies and the pseudo-democracies, some of them which are in between the democracy and non-democracy. But the countries like Rwanda, outright, you can say those are benevolent dictatorship because the leader has been in power for a long time. He has got no opposition. If he gets any strong opposition, that opposition, like Victoria and Gabriel, has to be locked up so that he can still stand on his own. So we don't know whether actually election like those ones in Rwanda, in Angola, in Zimbabwe, in Pretoria, Guinea, Uganda, Cameroon, the big bulk of the countries, whether we should classify them as elections or just as a facade of an election, just a mock election, just to dupe the international election, but not actually real elections. Real elections is what we had in Nigeria, what we are going to have in Kenya, what we had recently in Lesotho. Those are what we call elections, not elections where someone is just going to gather people to line up and give them some food. Then they can be able to go to the ballot box and put in their vote.
I see. Robert, Suleiman there says there's no opposition. Does anybody over there, people you talk to, doubt who the new president will be after the elections?
I would love to agree with Suleiman on some parts, on some of the elements. One is that the issue of the democracy in some countries of Africa are actually based on the context of the country. But not only the context, but also what he calls benevolent dictatorship. I would love to omit the word of benevolent because dictatorship is dictatorship. Yes, like in Kigali, we already know, not even now, since 2015 when the constitution was amended, to have President Kagame run again for the third term. It was so clear that they, even his supporters and some people who are even the parliament, which was forwarding the amendment of the constitution, was like having Kagame come back for the third term, which is already known that yeah, there are some independent candidates here who are making some strong statements, but hard to be to find out that there is actually some movement supporting that statement. That we already know in some of the countries in Africa, we already know who is going to be the president even before the election happens. So that's not only the issue of some of the independent commission, for instance, electoral commission. The issue of how the society is organized. You find that some of the regimes in Africa, they do run what I would call absolute power. They hold absolute power. They hold political power, economic power, and social power. So you find that some of these countries, even people are not allowed to give their opinions without retribution. So that makes it even hard for political competition. For instance, here in Rwanda, it's very hard to find a very active opposition. For instance, the two largest parties, political parties in Rwanda, which is called Liberal Party, which is there, and PSD, they have already endorsed President Kagame even way before his party endorses him for third term. Yeah. Even his party is yet to nominate him.
Surely, Douglas, we need to be serious in Africa. Some of these leaders, people have to be serious. Why should they fool the population, really? We, as my brother has said, it is already very clear he's the president. Now, you waste a lot of money for the country, a lot of resources for the country. You waste people's time. You pretend. You cheat the nation. Instead of instituting institutions, clear institutions, because elections are not about putting a vote in the box. It's about the processes, mm-hmm. plus the institutions which are there. The Electoral Commission, how is it established? Is it an independent institution? Is the climate conducive for an opposition to operate, or for his friends or his allies to compete? What is happening are his allies who are competing, even those who pretend not to be his allies or would not be his allies. They are so weak to make a dent into his political parties. So why should these leaders continue to hoodwink the population? Why should they continue to waste the resources of the country? The money being spent is enough to build a couple of hospitals. And the man just continues himself in power. Nobody is going to touch him. Mm-hmm. They control all the institutions. He controls the finances. He controls the army and the police. He controls the parliament. So he can just pass any law and remain the absolute leader. There is no need to pretend, because who doesn't know that Mr. Kagame is going to be the president? Who doesn't know since 2008 that Mugabe is the president? Who doesn't know that Biya is the president, or the way Yahya Jammeh was, and so many Idris Deby? Mm-hmm. All these people, they are just pretending, but they are no institution. The processes are fraud. It is just a facade. In Rwanda, they are just going to buy T-shirts and give the population and then invite them for rallies. What does that one do? Democracy is not about an individual leader. It's about the future of the country.
Robert, what's the mood like? Do the people feel this is just a formality, or are they anxious about the coming election?
I don't think that there is something actually indicating that there is the real presidential election going on in 2 months. It's just a formality. It's the life as usual. But most of the thing, probably when I come back to Sulaiman, most of the thing is not even about election. It's even beyond that. Before you come up with election, how do you have a very democratic system in place which allows even opposition to operate? Some of these countries, like here, it's very hard to find even political space, even politicians. Even some people are even afraid to align with some politicians because they fear for their lives. And again, It's not only that, but also when you see that the whole, for instance, like the context of Rwanda, when President Kagame came to power through the ruling party RPF, by then the last regime had committed genocide and was among the, the whole umbrella of bad guys. So you had to begin with the new systems, with the new institutions, coming up with the everything, like building from scratch. Having said that, it is very simple, for instance, like security services in Rwanda to identify themselves with the ruling party RPF. But it's also simple for some of the people, a big majority of the society which took part in genocide, find that actually the best way to get away with that guilt is to ally with the ruling party RPF. But again, another issue is I would love to blame the leader, the president himself, but again, the issue of Africa election, I would also blame the people. Okay, I blame the leaders for taking advantage on the ignorance of the people, but again, I blame the people of the no. For instance, in Uganda, everybody who argues in English and the intellectuals, they have a very critical mind, a very critical mass, but it's not organized that it can even push for greater governance and deepening democracy in that country. But for instance, in Rwanda, you find that the majority of the people here are not educated. So when you don't know your rights, it's very hard to claim them. So when you are coming to have an election like this one, I don't expect a lot because, one, the system itself is rigged. Two, the ruling power has amassed a lot of wealth in the whole 3 years they have been in power. They control the politics, they control businesses, they control civil society, they control even political arena here in the country. So they control everything. They can decide whether you should be in business or you should be out of business. They decide on everything. So on that, I blame the leadership, but again, I blame the people themselves, who actually, in most of the countries, you find them, for instance, in Rwanda, you find them that they are so obedient, even in time of suppression.
I see.
For instance, let me talk about...
Yeah, go ahead.
For instance, let me talk a little about Kenya. Kenya, the system is democratic. You find people are active, the society is active. They talk their mind, but the issue of Kenya is though they are going for election, but they have one problem, which is forming tribal alliances. The parties themselves competing, they are tribal parties. It's an alliance of the tribe. So you find that the big part or the powerful part, it's the part which makes huge alliance based on tribe and ethnicity, which is very dangerous, very, very, very dangerous. And therefore, though you would have democracy and this competition you might be happy about, but you find that some of the competition in democracy, if not very well guided by strong institutions, they can put down the society just in the blink of an eye. For instance, I'm going to give you an example. Like, I know Congo, DRC Congo, they are crying for election. But I'm not sure if you call for election right now in Congo, the country will go in fire. Because simply there is no process. The process wasn't built. There was no democratic process. And the narrative would be, people want to go for election, they needed to choose their leader. But choosing, you need first of all to be informed about the type of the choice you are making and your interest. So having said that, yes, some of the institutions in African countries are still young, that democracy is still young, it needs to grow. But you find some of the leaders, they don't give a chance for these institutions to grow.
For those just joining us now, you are listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we are coming to you from the VOA studios here in Washington. Tonight we are discussing predetermined elections in Africa. Our panelists are Robert Mugabe, a journalist with the Voice Media Group in Kigali, and Suleiman Mugula, a South African-based independent political analyst. And I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, here in Studio 6 in Washington. Suleiman, Robert there raises very pertinent issues. There's the issue of a compliant population. In some countries, it's because they are cowed by the brutal force of the governments in power. To what extent are the people to blame for this predicament?
There is a group, for example, the elites. The elites, paradoxically, they are victims of bad leadership, because a poor economy makes them subservient to whoever holds the power to livelihood. So the leaders are so bad, they don't grow the economies, they create poverty. Once there is poverty, they are able to govern anybody. The elites, for example, in Uganda, when you look at the intellectuals who have carved in and they are supporting Museveni, they are not supporting Museveni because they think he's the best leader. Many of them are doing it because it is a means of survival. The economy has gone so much down to the extent that survival is so difficult in Uganda. You have to be linked to the government. The way my brother has said, like in Rwanda, Uganda is the same also like in Rwanda. For you to operate a business successfully, you need to be linked to government. You need to be a supporter of the party in government. So you find that if you are far away from the center of power, you have to die in poverty. That is why people are giving that. So partly, some, like the educated people, they join the government because they have to earn a living. They have to survive. Then the other ones, there is a group which joins not willingly, but because of brute force. These guys who have stayed in power, remember, many of them were not elected in power. They came to power through the barrel of the gun. DRC, Rwanda, Uganda, Ethiopia, Chad, Gambia, apart from the new government, before Yahya Jammeh, all these countries, most of them, they came through the power of the gun. After that, they removed the uniform and put on suits. So they are still the military warlords whom we had when they took over power. So the people don't have guns to fight them. If they don't have guns, they have to accept to be loose. Of course, there is a little group of gullible, but you can't say they are gullible, no. Because when you compare to countries where there is democracy, for example, Lesotho is a very small country. But even the illiterate people in Lesotho, they enjoy to determine the fate of their country. If you watch the election in Lesotho, all the people in the rural areas, very illiterate, but they were lining up to elect their leaders, and they wanted the election to be free and fair. So these leaders are holding to power because they have got the guns, because they have got control of the economy, because they have got control of the security and everybody in the country. And what makes it so bad is that one of the reasons they hold in to power is that after the longer they stay, the more they create a likelihood of chaos after they have gone. They kill all the institution. They kill sometimes even the opposition. Then they remain even within their own parties. They remove those who would have been able to replace them. Then they leave a vacuum to the extent that the country appears that if they leave, there will be chaos. The way my brother is saying in DRC, the army belongs to Kabila. If he goes away, it might divide itself into factions, and then there is outright war. The same in Uganda. Uganda, they have created a narrative that the opposition is so weak, or the opposition has got no ideas. Who said that the opposition don't have ideas? Where did they get the ideas when they were entering into power?
Another thing.
Yes, go ahead, Robert.
Another thing also, what Suleiman is talking about, I would love to come back on the issues of the elite class. For instance, I'm going to give you actually the first paradox of the elite class is the corruption. What they think and what they aim to is only money and how to be rich. So They don't think about the country. They are able even to save their soul, even to ally with the government and sell their lives, some of their lives, just to survive and get this fame and national acclamation that they are powerful people, that they're brightest. Because when you attend, for instance, when you are a university professor and you come to criticize the government or you criticize some of the policies, you are very much ignored. So to be able to be accommodated in some of these governments, you need to be politically correct and even try to sell some sex statistics to please the power. So that's one thing. It's for the glory, too. It's for money. Most of the so-called elite class in this country, for instance, I was telling you about the two biggest political parties in Rwanda, SD and PR, which have already endorsed President Paul Kagame of their ruling party, RPF, even way before the RPF even gives him a go-ahead as their presidential nominee. So it's the issue of stomach politics. It's the issue of what do I get out of this. It's the issue of what I can call political prostitution. It's just being a slut politically. They have no stand. They have no ideology. Initially, to have a political party, you need power.
Yes.
But here you are coming 23 years around the road, 25 years. One party called the PER is celebrating 25 years of its existence. They are not even pushing to assume power. What they want is to arrive with the ruling party and have President Paul Kagame in power. And President Kagame will pick some of them to be in the parliament, and others will be some ministers, and others will be the local leaders in their local leadership authority.
But
the main issue is, even before you come to have democracy, like a presidential democratic election, you need even to have a functioning parliament. Look at our elite who are in the parliament. What are they doing? Do they speak for the people? No. They are sold out. They are. My first problem I have right now is not that people in Africa are illiterate. The issue I have now, the first problem we have, is that the literate people, the elite class, are corrupt than even the government they want to ally with.
Yeah, I
so
see.
They don't think about the future of the country. They think about what they gain from all this circus.
Yeah, it appears they are people who say they feed on each other, the elite and the political class, they all are about the same. But then there are those who argue that that may be short-sighted for them, because we have seen in countries where they have had no genuine and proper elections, where they have merged institutions into the ruling party or the governing class, when they eventually things fall apart, they go down with the countries, like in Libya, like the genocide that happened in Rwanda, like these countries, even those who have been benefiting, the elite, get swallowed up by the fire that comes after that. So, Suleiman, wouldn't that be short-sighted?
Most of these elites have their family in the West. They have their country in the West. They use dollars. They don't even send their kids in the U.S. or somewhere in Europe. So they don't really care what they want. Is money, and when there is chaos in the country, they will always fly and go. And also another issue, when you're a leader and you close all democratic avenues, you are calling for conflict. Either it can take 10 years or 15 years or 20 years when you are holding power, but when you close other democratic avenues, you are telling people that the only way to remove me is to use guns. So you find, hence you have this cycle of conflict, wars, death, and civil wars, and all these things.
I see.
So it's very complicated somehow.
I see. Suleiman, it's ironical, some people have observed that despite all we're discussing tonight, the international community, the powers in the West, in Western Europe and America, still give a bill of health to some of these countries. Their leaders are held in high esteem and described as emerging democracies. How do you reconcile that kind of hypocrisy, maybe?
You are correct, Douglas. The saddest part about Africa is that the continent has not only suffered under the hands of these archaic and dictatorial leaders, but there is also conspiracy with the international community, which allows them. For example, why should the international community send observers to Rwanda to observe what? Why should it make a report? A report about what? Now, what about a country like Uganda? What is there to observe? Even parliamentary elections, again, how can you say there were elections to elect the president's brother, the president's wife, the president's friends, the comedian, the musicians? Is that a country anymore? What value does Museveni add to a country like Uganda? Kenya has just finished 500 kilometers of the SGA railway. It was launched together with Uganda. They have not even started. Instead, they have failed even to complete the road, hardly 50 kilometers from the airport to the capital. It is going to take 100, maybe 10 years. They are still circling over it. How many roads has Museveni built? How many hospitals has he built? Has he done anything about poverty? The infrastructure. In Kenya, they are celebrating the achievement in infrastructure. In Uganda, they are celebrating the promises of the promises. When the president in Uganda was addressing, the people are clapping, as my brother is saying, the elites in parliament are clapping for him because he's promising. Some of the promises of infrastructure which he's making today in 2017, he has been making them since 1986 when he came to power. Mm-hmm. So there is quite a difference. The hoodwinking which is there, there is no need. One wonders why the international community should accept to be hoodwinked also. Or is it double standard because Museveni is sending soldiers to Somalia? But at the extent, what is more serious and what is sad is that the more these leaders, my brother has said, the more they stay in power, the more they postpone disaster.
I see.
The more they stay in power, the more they postpone poverty to continue. There will be no economic growth, there will be no economic development when they are still in power, their corruption, their whatever they have been holding. They don't add any value. Any leader who goes beyond 10 years is just turning the country backward. Douglas, it doesn't matter whether when sanctions are imposed, people in Burundi will not get petrol and they will suffer. It doesn't matter whether when you call the sanctions to Zimbabwe, people suffer. The fact of the matter is that the international community should hold the sanctions to these countries. People in Equatorial Guinea, the leaders spent so long, people are very poor. People in Uganda, people in Angola, people in Cameroon. The leader staying does not add value to anything. The more they stay, the more the people suffer. There is need to change hands in terms of leadership, in terms of policies, so that the countries can try other leaders and see whether they can lift them out of poverty.
I see. Well, we're out of time. That wraps up this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'd like to thank our panel, Robert Mugabe of Voice Media Group in Kigali, and Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst based in South Africa. Gentlemen, thanks very much for being on the show.
You're welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Our producer tonight was Jackson Mvunganyi, and we'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. You can also drop us a line. Our email is reporters@voanews.com. Once again, thanks very much for tuning in, and until next week, I'm your host, Douglas Impoga in Washington, wishing you all the best.